right. Why don't we then have Mr. Bowker, Dr. Bowker, you're up here with us, but why don't you go ahead and tell the audience why you are going to step
down.
I've
been advised on legal counsel, as in the past, to recuse myself of this issue. Thank you.
Okay. And Monica Hunter is here. And Dr. Hunter, do you want to put on the record again why you are not participating in this?
Yes, good morning. I am a resident of Los Osos, so I'm also going to recuse myself from this proceeding.
Okay, thank you. All right. Well, we're going to continue with where we left off on December 2nd. And I'm just briefly looking at some notes for me to read that Cheryl Schaffner put together. This is the first chance I've had to really take a look at them. Introductory comments by the chair. I'll go ahead. I'll proceed. Okay, folks. This is the time and place for the continuation of a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of the proposed administrative civil liability for the Los Osos Community Services District. This matter was originally noticed for, and the first 2 days of hearing were held on December 1st and 2nd, 2005. As announced at that hearing and as subsequently noticed, this is the date and place for the continuation and conclusion of that hearing. This matter has been duly noticed, and two parties have been designated for this proceeding, the Los Osos Community Services District and the Regional Water Quality Control Board prosecution staff. As noted previously, this is since this is a prosecutorial matter, staff functions have been separated into two teams, the prosecution team and the board advisory team. This is done to ensure that the board has neutral advisors who have not been personally involved in the prosecution of the proposed enforcement actions. The prosecution team, consisting of Roger Briggs, Harvey Packard, Gerhard Huebner, Sorrel Marks, Matt Thompson, and Counsel Lori Oaken, have been treated like any other party before the Water Board throughout this proceeding and have not had ex-party contacts with the board or advisory team. The advisory team consists of Michael Thompson, to my immediate right, and legal counsel Cheryl Schaffner, to my immediate left, who came down from her Santa Rosa office today to serve in this capacity.
That's Michael Thomas, Mr. Chair.
Yes, you're right. Not Matt Thompson. That's like me getting Bruce Daniels and Daniel Press confused all the time. Okay, I would like to remind everyone that everyone that is going to testify at the last stage of this hearing that they are still under oath and sworn under penalty of perjury to tell the truth in this matter. Are there any witnesses present to give testimony today that were not at the December 1st or 2nd hearing or did not take the oath at that time? Okay, seeing no hands, I'm going to assume that everyone who is going to testify today has taken the oath. Okay, initially we need to deal with some... Mr. Onstott, you were here, I think, for day one, right, December 1st?
Correct. I was in the audience.
Right. And you took the oath at that time?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. We have a few procedural issues concerning a variety of motions, objections, and document issues, and this is probably going to take us a little bit of time to get through before we can get into new evidence that I had ordered be produced prior to this hearing. There's an outstanding subpoena issued to the Community Services District. and the Community Services District has a motion to quash before this panel, which is first on the list to address. Ms. Schaffner, do you want to describe what this item is about?
Certainly. Let me pull up a copy of the subpoena.
And folks, if you can't hear us, please let us know so that we can speak louder.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Can you hear me okay now? Okay, very good. Just got to use the microphone. This subject arises from the conclusion of the last day of hearing on December 2nd, at which the chair ruled that no further new evidence would be taken, any evidence that had not been submitted by the prior deadline or introduced at the hearing and accepted was not going to be admitted. The chair later modified that ruling, as is at his discretion, to ask for any new evidence that concerns, addresses, relates to the CSD's ongoing activities as they may affect compliance with the time schedule order or unlawful discharges in violation of the prohibition. Those would include actions that would help or hinder or delay or accelerate any ongoing compliance. This is a matter of routine consideration in enforcement actions. The board frequently considers ongoing compliance activities, whether it be a renewed effort to come into compliance by a discharger who has an enforcement action pending, or whether it is ongoing violations, either of which is fairly considered by the board as a equitable consideration in determining how much of enforcement action is necessary and appropriate to motivate compliance and to give credit where extra effort is being made to come into compliance. So it's not unique to this situation, and the chair asked that the parties, through, I believe, three different communications, December 4th, 6th, and 16th, I believe, that asked the parties to submit any available information that would affect this subject concerning ongoing compliance.
And let me just a brief, I want to just address that, you know, specifically, and I didn't realize you had something laid out here, Cheryl, for me to describe this issue. After the conclusion of the December 2nd hearing, and on my drive back home, of course, my mind was filled with what had happened December 1st and 2nd, as I'm sure everyone's was who was involved with this. And I began to realize that anything that might happen after December 2nd that either brought the district into compliance or took them further away from compliance, I felt was relevant and probative and important for this proceeding. And based on that conclusion that I drew, I then proceeded to talk with Cheryl and Michael, and we decided to issue a series of emails. It turned out to be three of them. But the purpose was to allow for a very narrow category of additional evidence to come in, solely dealing with compliance issues. And so although I had ruled at the conclusion of December 2nd that there would be no further testimony and evidence, I did make that ruling. As the hearing officer, I do have the ability and the authority to modify any orders that I do issue. That order was issued by myself, and it's my own modification of that for a very narrow category of documents to come in. And so that's why you have the series of emails that went out and the request for those documents. So I think, Mr. Onstott, after I received and reviewed your December, 16th letter, and I realized that the district really was not at least willing to provide any additional information, additional testimony, it was very clear to me that you were basing that in part on my December 2nd ruling, and apparently were overlooking the fact that I was modifying my own order, but were still not going to provide any additional information, that I felt it important to issue a subpoena to have these documents brought forth. I believe that in one of those emails that we had requested at least some of those documents, maybe the board resolutions or board minutes, I'm not quite sure, but I felt that we had provided the district with at least some early on heads up that we were looking for some of these documents. And part of the reason for that, and I want you to understand this, is that the district's theory so far to the board has been you can't do anything to the district unless it takes some official action. And Mr. Seitz was very clear, and Mr. McClendon, in going through what those were, you know, resolutions and things of that nature, official acts. And so I began to also contemplate the significance of that and realize that, you know, the district can also express its policy through its administrative officers and to give them direction like Mr. Bleski. And I wanted to make sure that the board and the record had all documents that might help us even look at what administrative functions the board was giving to staff to carry out its policies. And that was really the purpose and the intent behind that, is to flush that out. Anyway, I asked Mr. Thomas and Ms. Schaffner to prepare the subpoena and to get it served. I did look at your motion to quash. I've read through it. I did look at the code sections that you cited. I do want to go over them with you and take each of the objections that you raise one by one so we can flush this out. Maybe get this behind us. Why don't we start, Mr. Onstott, with the argument that you put forth on page 3 of your motion, the subpoena is not timely. And my question to you is, it's my understanding that the two sections that you cite in the Code of Civil Procedure, 1987 and section 2020.410, do not deal with a party who has been served a subpoena.
That is correct. The normal course of events in litigation is that subpoenas are served on non-parties, not parties to the action themselves. Usually that's given by notice. The notice provisions for documents are 20 days. That's why, and there's another notice provision for 15 days. That's why we think that 3 business days is unreasonable. It's our view that somebody recognized that they missed the notice period of 15 or 20 days, and the only way that they can request documents 3 business days before production today would be to issue a subpoena, which in our view is improper upon a party.
Actually, but if I could clarify.
You are correct that the statute pertaining to subpoenas to produce documents does say a reasonable period of time.
Right.
It is not a set amount of days.
Okay.
But given the holidays and 3 business days, when other places in the statutes mention 15 or 20 days, we think that 3 is unreasonable. In fact, so unreasonable, those documents are not here today. There's just not time to pull them out.
Okay, well, 1987 does not apply to the subpoena. Is that that's your understanding, correct? Okay. And 2020.410 does not apply to a subpoena served on a party?
Correct.
Okay.
Actually, I think probably the finer point to put on 1987, it is not required to use a subpoena to obtain this information, that a notice would be sufficient. However, the choice of use of 1987 is not inappropriate in this setting. It was the chair and board counsel chose the more formal path to ensure that the district was given all the process it could receive at this time, and that the reasonable time standard does come out of 1987 as well. And the question of whether the time provided is a reasonable period of time is a factual one for the board to determine whether the chair exercised his discretion appropriately in this setting. And the service was made on the 29th. And the question is, was the period of time between the 29th and today sufficient time to produce resolutions adopted by the board, minutes adopted by the board, draft resolutions, and draft minutes held by the board under consideration, and the minutes and notes taken by the board's secretary and the board's general manager at board meetings between the specific period set out in the subpoena, which was the end of September through this date, and or through the date of service of the subpoena, as I recall. Let's see, 9/27 through 12/29/2005. So we're talking about 3 months of very specific documents in the custody of the CSD, which shouldn't be that difficult to locate in their files. The question is, and noting, and the other relevant fact would be, as Mr. Young has noted, the CSD was notified on December 4th, December 6th, and December 16th that the chairman was wanting all documents relating to ongoing actions of the CSD. So there was a general notice that these files could be specifically of interest to the board. They're not extensive. They're very specific. And they should be right at the fingertips of the board. The question for the board of the CSD, for the question for the board to consider is that a reasonable period of time on this particular objection? Was that a reasonable period of time for the CSD to locate and provide those documents?
Well, let me ask you a few questions. You would agree that, assuming we even look at 1987 as a corollary and for guidance on what might be reasonable time frame, you agree that traveling to the place of attendance for the production, we can disregard that. You were going to be coming here anyway.
Correct.
And that's out. Okay.
Correct.
So really the only question for us to resolve is what would have been a reasonable time for your staff to prepare the documents? And let me ask you that. How many resolutions were passed during that three-month time period?
Well,
how many pages are we talking about?
Well, I don't know that, but it goes beyond resolutions, which I believe are also posted. It goes for drafts and it goes for notes. Notes that go back 3 months. Some people don't keep notes. Some people don't keep drafts of resolutions that they put together, and to dig on either computer files or call off deleted items or render that search over a holiday period in the course of three business days, we think is unreasonable. With regards to resolutions, there's probably a couple of them. I don't know off the top of my head. But the scope of the subpoena is broader than that.
Okay, let's address this. Are you the attorney that has been present during the CSD board deliberations?
Some of them.
During this time period?
Yes.
Okay. Who else? Has Mr. McClendon? Okay. Mr. McClendon, have you been at all of the CSD closed sessions?
No, not all of them.
Okay. Has there always been a lawyer present during the closed sessions?
Well, I'm a little confused here. Are we talking about closed sessions?
Closed sessions during which time any documents would have been produced that are responsive to the subpoena. In other words, closed sessions where resolutions and minutes were discussed. Either proposed.
Those aren't items we're discussing in closed session.
Okay, were they done in open session?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how many pages of documents the district has that would be responsive to the subpoena?
To my best knowledge, parsing out what Mr. Onstad has talked about with drafts and preliminaries and notes, and talking about just the resolutions themselves, it's my understanding that we have a we have two resolutions, one of which contain one of which has an attachment to it with a deal point memo going back to the negotiated deal with Mr. Our Assemblyman Blakeslee, and I believe those are part of this record. You already have those.
Okay. How about how many times has the board met in closed session since October 1st or 2nd, whenever the beginning of the time frame?
I've lost count.
Okay.
I'm going to guess it's over 20.
Okay. Is someone taking notes during closed session?
There may be some notes that are taken, but those would be attorney-client confidence.
Is any member of staff taking notes other than attorneys?
No, not to my knowledge.
So the attorney is essentially the scribe for whatever goes on in closed session?
Correct.
Okay. Are there any draft resolutions that have been produced during the time period mentioned in the subpoena that exist?
There are drafts that I have
and I don't mean drafts to the two resolutions.
Oh, okay. Then
I mean other resolutions that are in draft mode but have not been finalized.
I'm not aware of but in terms of draft resolutions, it's usually myself. I'll take the first cut at it, and I'm typically overriding those with as comments and changes come in. So I don't know that I would actually be able to tell you I've got draft version 1, draft version 2, draft version 3. I've got a final, which is the one ultimately adopted. And now on the second resolution, there were some interlineations on actually at the open session of that resolution. That's my recollection. I suppose that would require going to the outfit that does the taping of that, and you could probably pull off of the recording of that what those specific edits were right there in open session.
All right, how about minutes? Do you have minutes of all of your meetings?
Minutes, I would not be able to talk on those. I believe we're...
Well, who is responsible for generating minutes?
It's staff.
Who specifically? Mr. Blesky?
Karen Vega.
Okay. All right. And does she attend the closed sessions also?
No.
Okay. Who takes minutes of closed sessions?
We don't have closed session minutes.
Is Mr. Blesky, he participates in closed sessions, doesn't he?
Yes, we okay. Generally have the general manager. Yes.
Okay, Mr. Blesky, do you take notes during closed session?
I take some notes.
Okay.
There are more diary entries.
Mr. McClendon, I'm not sure that we have the two resolutions.
Are you talking about the resolutions adopted since September 27th?
Yes.
And you say we have those resolutions in the record?
I believe we, it's my understanding.
Are those the ones concerning your negotiations with the state board?
Correct.
There's been no other resolutions adopted since that date in this three-month period?
Have there been?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would just, in order to preserve the record, I would suggest that if people from the audience are going to be testifying to responses to your questions, that they do so with a microphone so that we...
Yes, thank you. Please, could you repeat that into the microphone, what you just said?
Could you come to the podium and we'll be easier.
Very good.
We have some resolutions. One resolution in particular that had to do with the project itself was a commitment to the project. We also have other, I believe we have some other resolutions related to other dealings with our other CSD functions.
And have you adopted minutes in that three-month period?
Yes, we have. We do not have complete minutes adopted right now. Due to some of the administrative changes we would like to see in our form and format of minutes.
And how are these documents kept in the regular course of business?
With the resolutions, we have a resolution file. With the minutes, we have a minutes file. Fairly straightforward.
So they're just a file to be picked up?
Yes.
Okay.
And who is your custodian of records?
That is a little unclear. I'd have to refer to counsel on that because of the relationship I have as interim general manager as a consultant, and also we still have our general manager still on the payroll.
But at this time, any official act by the CSD that is taken at a meeting is going to go be presented to the board of directors by you as the chief executive officer, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess they clearly have adopted minutes and resolutions, and they know where they are, and they clearly have draft resolutions and minutes, and the notes.
How much time would it take, Mr. Blesky, to retrieve those two files and your notes?
Not from closed session, but from open session. Notes that you would have taken at the open session.
My notes?
Hmm?
I take, those are my diary entries. Those are never, ever in the project files or the official files. Those are my personal records.
Which you take down as part of your duties in performing your duties for this district, correct? They're not like about doctor's appointments or whatever. They're notes of the meeting. That's what we're talking about.
They're personal diaries.
About,
not a part of the official record.
They're about the meeting.
They're my personal diaries. I mean, I'm going to leave it at that because they do contain personal notes. They contain addresses. This is the stuff that I do to my personal reminders. If I make notes that are project specific, they go in the project file.
Would you put in these notes any directives that you were given by the board? Anything for you to follow up on and carry out in terms of board policy?
I would make notations that are to refresh my memory.
Okay, and what about draft minutes and resolutions that are pending but not yet adopted? When you those are prepared for the board meeting, but say the board hasn't gotten to them, they're not agendized, they either didn't adopt them, discussed them, and sent them back for some amendments, whatever. They're not adopted, but they're draft. Would those be, I would assume they would go through you, and therefore they would be presented by your staff to you to present to the board?
When we're routing what we would consider our latest version, yes.
Okay. So do you have currently any draft resolutions or minutes that the board has not adopted yet?
The only thing that I have right now on my desk, actually I'll have them Friday, will be for stuff after December 29th for our January 12th meeting.
Okay.
All other version control being a real issue, usually what I do is I fold the draft after I've made the annotations, confirm that the annotations were made to the final version or the current draft, and then I destroy all drafts.
So are you saying that your diary, as you call it, of the meeting, your notes about the meeting, I'd like to just get real clear. Are you saying those are privileged in some way?
That would take a legal opinion.
It would. Thank you.
As was mentioned earlier, Mr. McClendon either took the first cut or reviewed those drafts. That's attorney work product. Or, to the other extent, and I think more importantly, draft resolutions are completely irrelevant because they do not reflect what the CSD has done, what action they did or did not take as a body. Even resolutions that are proposed and not adopted are irrelevant. So if the chair is going to deny the motion to quash, I want to make it very clear that the chair is holding that unofficial actions or actions that do not represent the CSD are relevant in an enforcement proceeding against the CSD. I'd like that explicitly held, Mr. Chair, if that is your ruling.
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson.
We haven't finished going through your motion
right at
this point, but Mr. Onstott, it appears to me, and we were given a recent San Luis Obispo Tribune article that had comments made by CSD staff that the district was going to sell or trade the Tri-W site and the Andre site, and the Broderson site for another site. And my concern is that things are going on with the district where there's direction being given, policy being formulated, that are not going to appear in resolutions or drafts and minutes. And I think that that is very relevant information to compliance or noncompliance. And it's to that body of information that I'm trying to get a handle on.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, in response to that, two things, and I'll address it more in closing. With regards to the chair's prior direction that newspaper articles are hearsay and will not be admitted, and I'll get to that more, like I said, later in closing. Secondly, real property negotiations by public entities are privileged. So we would again cert the real property exception. Those could be discussed in closed sessions. If it relates to litigation, those were properly agendized and can also be subject to privilege and discussed in closed session. The same thing holds true with any communications regarding counsel between either the district staff or its board members regarding that as well.
What privilege are you citing for discussions about real property being protected? I don't know what you're talking about.
Real property negotiations can be held in closed session and not subject to discovery in enforcement proceedings.
Likely that that privilege was waived anyway once the CSD directors discussed it publicly with the newspaper. I mean, I can get into eliciting that testimony by examination and get that out, but I would say that that privilege, if it exists, was waived.
Well, we would take the position, number one, it assumes facts not in evidence that there was a sale considered, and number two, we would take exception to the fact that one director or one staff member can waive a privilege held by an entire agency.
And that is something that I'm sure we can all go have some lengthy debate about, and I'm not sure that it truly bears on the outcome of this motion to quash at the moment. But I would also like to circle back around to your comment, Mr. Onstad, about hearsay evidence. And just to refresh the memory of all those present, the government code provides under Section 11513 that the hearing need not be conducted according to technical rules relating to evidence or witnesses, and any evidence, relevant evidence, shall be admitted if it is the sort of evidence on which reasonable persons are accustomed to rely. If there's hearsay evidence introduced, it can be admitted over objection if it fits any of the exceptions, or it can be used to supplement or explain other evidence. And the chair has indicated a desire to stay away from newspaper articles just because they tend to be a lot of cobbled together information that's difficult to validate and verify. However, it can be used as a basis for questioning, and it can be used to corroborate other evidence, and it can be used if it meets other hearsay exception rules, such as statements of party against interest, such as evidence that is otherwise supported by corroborating evidence. And under those, under that rubric, the chair, I believe, has a reasonable basis for inquiring into the director's statement to the newspaper, considering the importance of the concept of selling the property, which is the only path to compliance at this point. But let's go back to what you do have. What you have stated you actually have in the possession of the CSD that you know of, that you could go lay your hands on right now, and that are all minutes and resolutions that the general manager just noted are in two files. That all those are the documents that have been adopted, approved by CSD vote for the period of 9/27 through 12/29. Those sound clean and easy to go lay your hands on. They're two files. The question of draft minutes and resolutions that are pending but not yet adopted, they, you have argued, are privileged because your counsel has made notes on them. However, the counsel notes could be redacted if need be to protect the privilege. I'm sure it sounds like some of those exist and could be located. The notes taken by Mr. Blesky at the CSD board meetings that were not in closed session, I don't see a privilege that would apply, and that was my original question to you, Mr. Onstad. Do you believe a privilege applies to any of the notes taken by Mr. Blesky at the open sessions?
No, other than a relevance objection. If there's an offer of proof, if you know specifically that there are notes there that are germane to this and can either quote them or give us a date and time in his calendar, then yes.
Well, we're not going to know that. And, of course, the purpose for the subpoena, because we don't have possession of the documents, we don't know what's in them, is to use it as a discovery tool. And I think you know the standard in discovery is to get your hands on any evidence that may become admissible at trial or hearing. And so there may be things that are outside that scope but may lead to admissible evidence. And that is the purpose for the subpoena and the request for those categories. So I don't know. There may be 80% of it. It may be really irrelevant to what we're doing, and there may be some nuggets of information that may be probative one way or the other. Till we see it, we don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me just take a throw at this. What I understand, I see it, you're trying to get probative information on what the district is doing or not doing, in order to help you make your decision here. And it seems to me that what's happened here is perhaps we've gotten a little turned around a bit and spun around with this idea of draft documents and things of that sort, not understanding. What I was handed a list here of board accomplishments that were actually done, and not by necessarily in every case by a resolution or an ordinance, but simply by simple motion. They also gave me a couple of notes here on resolutions that I had forgotten about, one regarding the district attorney, one regarding the U.S. Inspector General. What it seems to me would be the probative evidence that you're looking for would be, and I'll just throw this out, is all of the agendas for all of our meetings with the agenda staff packets on those, which would have the staff reports on each agenda item, and that would show you what this district has done since October 1 with all of these meetings, with all of the actions that they've considered. It would also show you actions where, for example, maybe they've been on the agenda, they've been pushed aside, but they're in the pipeline, so to speak, so you can have that over the horizon look at where we're going. Perhaps that was the confusion that we had here, and what would be perhaps be the most probative evidence would be, and I'm sure it's a lot of information, but it would be all of the agendas and all of the agenda packets.
Mr. Shellcross.
Would those agendas and packets include what action the board took?
That would be the minutes.
Okay, that's why.
So that would close the loop. In other words, minutes without all of that backup are really kind of meaningless. You could look at the minutes and say, well, they hired so-and-so to do such-and-such study, but without the agenda pack, without the staff report on what's that study about, you really don't have any information there other than what was the final action, but you have no context on that.
Well, I think that would be helpful. I also, though, want to see Mr. Bielski's notes. And the purpose for that is I want to see what direction has been given to Mr. Bielski during this period of time where he is, in fact, carrying out administrative functions and board policy, which may not be reflected in the minutes themselves or the resolutions. So,
I guess one final factual point before
okay.
we draw this to closure on this issue of what documents we're asking for, where are they, what's reasonable to produce. I would like to refresh the memory of the chair because he alluded to it earlier and for the benefit of the rest of the board. On December 6th, almost a month ago, on behalf of the chair, Michael Thomas sent a note to all the parties saying that the chairman wanted all available evidence, new information, and not previously submitted materials, including CSD board minutes and resolutions regarding the time period in question that could affect the ability of CSD to comply with the TSO. So it's been almost a month, not 3 days, that the CSD has had to locate these documents. And the response to that request came, there were two responses actually, that didn't seem to be aware of one another. One of them was from Mr. Onstott. And in that response, Mr. Onstott affirmatively refused, said that the CSD will not produce the documents requested. And that led to another request on the 16th and ultimately led to the subpoena, just to make this all
right.
tidy on the record for clarity's sake. But to wrap up this first segment of it.
Can you just wrap up the categories at least that, based on our examination, we know that we can at least specify and I don't want to finish going through his
okay.
points here.
Will do. The three categories of documents requested were the draft minutes and resolutions pending but not yet approved. Those have been discussed as being available but perhaps containing edits by counsel that may be privileged. So those sounds like they're identifiable and locatable. The second subject category was all minutes and resolutions approved by the CSD board for the period specified. The general manager has testified those are clearly identifiable, easily locatable in two files. And the third category, notes taken of the meetings by Mr. Bielski. And Mr. Onstott has admitted that those are not privileged. He questions their relevance. The chairman believes that they contain relevant and potentially admissible evidence, and that is the universe of documents.
Well, relevancy is not a standard for discovery anyway.
No. And
okay. It is upon submission for documents and testimony at trial, but not as a discovery bar.
And, however, the subject of the universe of documents, notes taken at board meetings for this specified period, are likely to lead to admissible evidence. I don't think that is questionable.
Okay, let's go through the rest of the argument here. The subpoena violates the chair's order declaring evidence closed as of December 2nd, 05. I think I've already commented on that it is myself who amended my own order of December 2nd, and so the subpoena does not violate my modified order. The subpoena was improperly served. Michael Thomas has been segregated from the prosecution staff team. Now, yes, he is a staff member of the Regional Water Quality Control Board, but he, for this proceeding, is not an employee or a party of the prosecution staff team. I think he's perfectly, he's a perfectly legitimate person to serve a subpoena.
Yeah, this is, I think.
Excuse me, I don't want to hear any comments from the public at this point in time. Okay, I just don't like that. I want to be able to listen to what is said by the people up here at the podium, from either people that are in favor of what you may hear or not in favor of what you hear. If you cannot keep your comments to yourself, I will ask you to leave this proceeding. And I'm not going to repeat this.
On the point that the chairman just made about Mr. Thomas not being a party, I think that really is a critical aspect of this proceeding. In order to provide a fair hearing to the CSD, the functions of staff have been separated, and Mr. Thomas is very specifically not a party to this action. Officially designated by the chairman. Those parties are the prosecution team staff as named and participating, and the CSD. This is a formal process that is created to protect the due fair hearing rights of the CSD, and it has been honored. Mr. Thomas has not participated as a party. Therefore, we believe it was appropriate for him to serve the subpoena.
But as part of that component, there's an argument that the manner in which Mr. Thomas served the subpoena violated something. And I'm not quite sure what. I'd like to give the district an opportunity to tell me. I did read Mr. Bleski's letter that was sent to Mr. Briggs complaining about the manner in which the subpoena was served. But I guess the core question is, Mr. Onstott, what is it about that makes the service of the subpoena defective?
Nothing.
Okay, thank you.
It was just an informational item, but what the process server did, what Mr. Thomas did, does not have any bearing on the validity of the subpoena.
Okay. And then the last component is the affidavit of Cheryl Schaffner is insufficient. Section 1985 states that an affidavit in support of a subpoena, deuces tecum, specify the exact matters or things desired to be produced, setting forth in full detail the materiality thereof to the issues involved in the case. Here Ms. Schaffner testifies that the requested documents, quote, pertain to ongoing actions of the CSD affecting compliance as equitable matters in considering the proposed ACLA, close quote. Such vague reason is nothing more than a fishing expedition and is far from the full detail required by the statute. In addition, Ms. Schaffner requests draft minutes and resolutions of the district board. However, because the district only acts by a vote of its board, draft minutes and resolutions by definition have no probative value. Thus, they cannot be deemed to pertain to actions of the CSD affecting compliance. Similarly, personal notes taken by Ms. Vega or Mr. Bleski have no probative value on district compliance. The subpoena was directed to the custodian of records for the district, which means that the scope of the subpoena is for district records, not personal notes. Well, I think the categories are, I don't agree with your conclusion. If you read the categories, I think they're fairly specific. We've already gone through the three categories that we have requested. They have time constraints. They're not open-ended. It's about a three-month period, and the types of documents are identified as closely as one can without actually having them in their possession and having not seen them. There's an issue with the reason or cause put into the subpoena underlying the request, and Ms. Schaffner put in here, these documents pertain to the Regional Water Quality Control Board's consideration of actions taken or directions given by the CSD board or staff that could help, hinder, accelerate, or delay the CSD's compliance with orders of the regional board, as provided by Water Code Section 13.327. I think that that states a reasonable justification and rationale for why those categories have been demanded. They pertain to ongoing actions of the CSD affecting compliance as equitable matters in considering the proposed ACL. I think there's enough justification. I think there's enough specificity. I do want the documents produced. I want the two files produced that Mr. Bielski spoke about. I'd like Mr. Bielski's notes. And I would like to have this material to this board before we go into closed session for deliberation. Now, we have, within the regulations, we have the, first of all, the authority to issue subpoenas ourselves as hearing officers. We have simply availed ourselves of that opportunity. We're trying to get to all of the facts that we may feel is important in this matter. Ms. Okun and Mr. Briggs may feel that they have sufficient evidence to put on their case and to make recommendations to the board. But the statutes and the regulations allow the board, acting on its own, to issue subpoenas, and I have availed ourselves of that opportunity. I did not have the subpoena issued if I was not going to seek compliance with it or would not follow through with enforcement of it. We do have powers of contempt, and I don't want to be put into a situation where we have to go down that path. I would prefer that we just have the documents produced, let's say by 2 o'clock today. If we don't get them produced, then the board will just have to decide collectively whether it wants to go to the next step, which would be deciding to issue a citation for contempt.
Mr. Chair, we don't disagree with the subpoena power that you have. The basis of most of our objections have been the fact that this is basically a moving target of evidence, and things have been requested after final determination of close of discovery, if you will, and then there's more, and then there's more, and then there's more. Now we're at a point where evidence is being requested that will not be subject to being confronted by both parties. The chair has indicated it's his intent to terminate these proceedings today. But we're obviously not going to be in violation of a subpoena. I will note for the chair that Mr. Bielski just gave me a note that the office person is not there today and the copy machine is broken. But we will do what we can to produce the documents that the chair requested by 2 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll have Mr. Bielski testify under oath of his best efforts to do that by 2 o'clock. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, there's...
Well, if it doesn't, we'll deal with it at that point in time.
Okay. Fair.
Mr. Chairman, if I might make offers on behalf of Water Board staff, would it be possible if Mr. Bielski brought his originals to avail them of the copier?
Well, of course.
Yes.
If your copier is broken, the documents can be brought here, and you can make use of our facility to make photocopies.
That's fine. And I also want to make it clear that in doing this production, it is in compliance with the chair's order, and we are not in any way, shape, or form waiving our objections by producing them.
That's fine. Okay. So obviously the conclusion for that first item was that the motion to quash is denied. The next item is a request for another continuance from the CSD.
The since the subpoena was an act of the chairman, and I think it would be appropriate, given the fact that we just had this extensive hearing, presentation, and dialogue of evidence in front of the entire board, to seek the board as a whole's agreement or disagreement by voice vote as to the decision whether to quash the motion to deny the motion to quash, if anybody is interested in making such a motion.
Mr. Hayashi?
I'll make the motion that we quash.
Second.
I'm sorry, to be clear, you mean make the motion to deny, move that you deny the motion to quash? Is that what you mean?
That's correct.
Okay, move. Thank you.
You don't want to quash the subpoena, right?
No.
Okay, we want to make that clear. All right, is there a second?
I did that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah, anyone opposed? Okay, and I abstain from that vote. Okay, next item is a request for another continuance from the CSD. And let's see here. There's three bases for that. One, to wait until the CSD's petition to the State Board is resolved. And that petition is the one that Mr. Grimm put forth.
That's correct.
Challenging the time schedule order.
That's correct.
Okay. Two, because of my request for documents relating to ongoing CSD actions affecting compliance and my allowing both parties the opportunity to submit further briefing on CSD objections between December 2nd and December 28th. And the third component of this request was because the holidays fell in the midst of that period. Let me just address the first one, and that is the petition to the State Board, I believe, and I've read it, does not deal with the Basin Plan prohibition discharge alleged violations, correct? So the petition doesn't completely even overlap the components of the ACL.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I would just point out, however, I think we have some testimony, and I can locate it here in a minute, from the prosecution team that basically says is that what you are seeking, though, is regardless of it be the Basin Plan prohibition or the 00131 order, that you are seeking penalties under the 00131, $10,000 per day. I believe that's in the record. If you give me a moment, I can locate it. We believe that it would be better for this board and for the district to have an understanding of what the State Water Resources Control Board is going to do with that petition. As a substantive matter, it would certainly add some guidance to your board and to the district on how to proceed with this enforcement hearing.
Can I clarify one thing?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, the ACLC alleges violations of both the time schedule order as well as the prohibitions.
Okay.
However, the penalties as justified in the staff's worksheet recommend that the penalties only be calculated based on the time schedule order violations. The board may choose to accept or reject that recommendation. The board may choose to go ahead and take the assessment based on the prohibition violations to the degree the evidence supports that, and or choose to assess penalties under the time schedule order. So it is both are at issue in the ACLC. It's just the staff suggestion that not to calculate on the prohibitions.
And if I could just clarify one thing about the complaint, there were findings in the worksheet under both theories. The conclusion was that the analysis of the factors was the same under either 13350 or 13308. The recommendation was to assess penalties under 13308 but the full allegations were set forth for both theories.
May I just offer a brief response?
Sure.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 35 of the transcript, commencing at line 22. This is from the prosecution team, and I quote, "The third thing is the basis for assessing penalties on 0031 versus assessing penalties on the basin plan prohibition. No matter what we base the penalty on, it is based on a district's oh, this is the wrong quote. That's why I'm sorry I got that. I think it's there. Right. Well, that's not the point I was trying to make. I apologize for not being able to find the exact quote. Maybe I have it here. Yes, page 74. I apologize, Mr. Chair, for going on to the wrong.
74, which volume?
I believe it's volume 1.
Okay.
I think it's on page 74. Mike, if you see it there, it starts off with on line 6, we will talk about the basin plan prohibition.
Hold on.
Sure.
You want to read it for us?
Sure.
Go ahead, Mr. Seitz.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have it, Ms. Oken? Okay.
Okay. It says, we will talk about the basin plan prohibition because it's relevant to the violations of the time schedule order. But our recommendation is that penalties be assessed based on the daily violation of the time schedule order. That's page 74, lines 6 through 11. And so what we're trying to point out here is that because 00131 in the time schedule order is now before the State Water Resources Control Board, it just seems that matter should be resolved prior to moving forward with this hearing before the State Water Resources Control Board. It just seems to me we're all going to be on much better footing with that decision having been made and resolved.
Well, here's my concern about that. I don't know when the State Board is going to take up the issue, what they're going to do with it. It's kind of speculative. Sometimes they just deny these things outright. And so because any order that we adopt would be put in abeyance anyway, pending an appeal by your district, I think you're protected that anything that we might do today would be put on the side burner while that issue gets resolved. So I'm strongly in favor of getting this hearing behind us, and I think that there's also a benefit, Mr. Seitz, to the CSD and to the public to know what the regional board's position is with respect to what's going on currently in Los Osos. I think that's important information that goes beyond just what's in the order itself, simply for planning purposes. So I'm in favor of moving forward for those two reasons. One is the petition really doesn't deal with the basin plan prohibition alleged violations, and so they don't really even overlap completely. It overlaps somewhat. And then the other reason is for not really knowing what the State Board is going to do and what it's not going to do with this and what time frame it's going to operate under. So I want to move forward so that we can get this behind us. Let's deal with the other two components, though, that we have identified as the basis for the request for continuance. And I guess it's the second one, then, is the documents relating to the CSD's actions affecting compliance. Do we now, Michael, have all the documents that we need or have requested? Affecting compliance?
We have The original document list that CSD submitted included documents that were not actually submitted to the board. So there was a list of documents. Some of them were submitted, some of them weren't. As a follow-up, CSD submitted additional documents that they had not mailed to us or sent to us originally, but not all of the documents that are on their original list have been submitted, and the latest document list that I passed around to the parties reflects that. So there are some documents that CSD has on their list but have not been submitted to us, and they're marked as such, and they're marked rejected.
Okay. But part of their request for a continuance is that they were grappling with producing additional documents. Mr. Seitz, have you had the opportunity to produce the documents that you wanted to produce? Whether they've been categorized as rejected or not, have you at least been able to produce them?
Before he answers that question, I just want to clarify that we're accurately portraying the nature of the request for the continuance. My understanding of the request for the continuance was not that the CSD's three or four opportunities to produce documents that it wished to introduce were insufficient. It was that the chairman was asking for additional documents concerning ongoing compliance issues that it did not believe it had the time to deal with and didn't want to produce. So it's not the documents you and Michael are talking about are documents that were due in November, that the chair gave them extra time through December to produce, and then extra time within that period to produce the specific ones that we're talking about now, which are the ongoing compliance issues. And that was the basis of the CSD's, one of the three bases of the CSD's request for a continuance, because it felt that the chairman's requests on December 4th, 6th, and 16th for any information concerning ongoing compliance were burdensome and they needed more time, although at the same time they refused to produce them. So, is that correct, or am I misreading your argument?
No, I think it's fairly accurate. On December 2nd, the chair issued orders at the conclusion of the meeting. Those orders were basically confirmed in a subsequent email from your staff. I think it was Ms. Scheffner sent an email out on Sunday. I was surprised to see it came out on a weekday, but it was a workday. But it came out basically confirming no new evidence and a brief outline of what this hearing was going to be composed of. I guess my point in making this is this, is as you recall, the board debated several time frames in which to conduct this continued hearing. This was, as far as I can remember, I think there was some talk about a December hearing, but most of the hearing dates were out in February, and I felt with my own vacation schedule, I don't mean to interpose my vacation as a material element into this proceedings, that I would have ample time, the district would have ample time to review the testimony, prepare for its substantive motions, and I agreed with Ms. Scheffner's later observations that I had told the chair I had no intentions of sandbag, even though it wasn't in its final order. I didn't mind giving notice of that so that everybody would be prepared to address them. But quite frankly, I wasn't prepared to spend time away from this case on issues that were, to me, clearly resolved on December 2nd, and that being testimony is closed, evidence is closed, and what happens to us from my perspective. I know the chair has a different perspective, and I honor that. I'm not trying to be disrespectful of the chair's concerns. But from my position, now I'm sitting here in my office dealing with these two fine gentlemen and other people attempting to comply with the situation of reopening evidence, reopening this new briefing schedule, new briefs. And it's just been my observation and that generally when these types of issues come up, which they do, and I don't, that there's a phone call, there's a joint conference between the prosecution team, the chair, and your team, and we iron this out. We say, well, how much time in order for you to do this new workload, in order to get this to the board, how much time do you need, considering this is the Christmas vacation time, and the chair's prior orders, and there is a discussion between the three parties as to the appropriate timing of when do we get this information out? Should the hearing be continued? I know it's much more difficult for the board to continue hearings because of there's a multiplicity of directors that are up here, and it's not like a court where the court can say, okay, we'll put this over for 2 or 3 weeks. But still, the idea of us reaching an agreement as to what you're specifically looking for, where we can talk about it, what documents are you specifically looking for, what types of briefs and things. So not that maybe I can sit back and say no, but at least everybody can have a firm understanding and whether or not a continuance would be appropriate. You know, we've gotten these orders from the chair through the chair's staff, three or four of these emails, and they're very perplexing, only because I would hope to spend this time reviewing transcripts and closing and not readdressing opening testimony and so forth. So that was the basis for that request for a continuance, was that I thought that it would be much more productive and much more efficient to have those discussions to try and address the chair's concerns and the prosecution staff's concerns and, of course, the district's concerns in responding to these three or four emails that were clearly outside of what my understanding was on December 2nd as to how this hearing was going to be conducted.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to clarify one factual point.
Yes.
Mr. Seitz didn't accurately portray the first direction given by the chair through me on December the 4th, which was the first direction after the hearing, that did not say no new further evidence. Absolute. It said no new evidence, but that the chairman can foresee if there are an exception to that, there are new facts or information available concerning the CSD's efforts to come into compliance or steps that will further inhibit or delay compliance with the TSO. If any new information arises on that front, the chair and the board will want to be apprised of that. That was the first statement that the chairman was modifying his ruling of no new evidence, and that was 2 days after the last hearing. That was followed up on December 6th with a specific request for minutes and resolutions. That was followed up on December 16th with another reiteration of that request. That was followed up with a subpoena, which we have in this hearing this morning, reduced to a determination that these are locatable in a handful of files and could be produced in a couple hours. And as for the additional burdens that keep being cited to in the responses to these interim communications between the last day of hearing and this one, the briefs that were invited were opportunities given by the chair to the CSD to further articulate its due process concerns or objections on the records. Those were not new burdens. They were opportunities given to better articulate the legal bases and factual bases for the objections that have been posed so that the chairman could give them fair consideration before today's hearing. The CSD, in some ways, chose to avail itself of those briefing opportunities. In some ways, it didn't. But I just want to make clear that those were not new mandates. They were supplemental briefing opportunities to clarify positions.
And let me add to that, Mr. Seitz, because I want you to know that I listened to the tapes of December 1st and 2nd, and I wanted to make sure that we had covered all of the objections that you had raised through the proceeding, and so that we were taking extra measures to not let anything slip through the cracks. So that's why you began to see requests really from me to give you the opportunity to flush out and to make sure that we understood exactly what these objections were so that we would know what kind of remedy to engage to address them. So that was the basis for it. I know things could have been done in a different fashion with respect to my request for additional information, but I deemed it to be most efficient and expedient to lay out some very detailed emails and send them in that fashion, because that would just both tell the prosecution team and your team, this is what I'm looking for. We don't need to debate it. If there was an issue that needed to be addressed, you guys could call on the phone, try to set up a conference call and say, you know what, this is going to be a sheer impossibility. And I don't really see the need for the continuance based on that, because there was the better part of a month from December 2nd to today. Even given the holidays, okay. And you know, with litigation, things go very quickly, and you guys have multiple attorneys and staff to work on things like this. Okay. So,
can I just make one?
Go ahead.
I understand what I think what the chair's ruling is deny the motion for a continuance. But I just want to make sure how I perceive this, just so that there's, and how the district through myself perceive this. I viewed these emails as requests for additional information. We're going to get to some substantive due process motions that I've made here, but I want the chair and the board to understand. Because I raised new issues here, and I say this in my preamble, I'm not waiving the objections that I made at the prior evidentiary hearing. I'll be happy to restate them on the record here, but my take on this was to put in what procedural and substantive due process issues I intended that to raise that I haven't raised in the past, and that's what is in my December 22nd, 2005 email.
Okay, so unless there's an objection by my colleagues, I'm going to overrule the motion to continue the hearing so that we can proceed. All right. Next item, there was an issue raised as to an ex-party contact that was made.
I'm not raising it. I mean, maybe my co-counsel is raising that. I'm not raising it.
Well, it was in Mr. Onstott's communication. Are you renewing an objection?
No, so that we can move on, we'll withdraw that.
Okay. All right, now we can get to the due process objections that were raised. Okay.